Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue, and they deliver to you online, edleysbbq.com. With Paul Kuharsky, I'm Jonathan Hutton. Pleased to be joined by Greg Cosell each and every Wednesday, presented by Turner Security. When you turn to Turner Security, you can leave your security issues at the door. TurnerSecurity.us for more information. Greg, great to have you back on the show. Hope you're doing well. Happy Thanksgiving to you and the family.
Same to you guys. And believe it or not, I'm actually going to stay home tomorrow. Now, I'm going to watch tape at home because I can. I won't do that for, 12, 15 hours. But I'm going to watch tape at home tomorrow, but I'm going to do it at home.
Watching film and watching ball live on the TV screen. That's what we'll normally be doing on Thanksgiving Day. So, Greg, not going into the office, which is the typical schedule for NFL films. I'm curious just your initial thoughts on the Titans win in Baltimore, but I'd like to start at the end and work our way through the game from there.
Sure.
The game-winning touchdown in overtime, the offensive line blocked the run very well. And going back and watching it, Greg, I didn't see this in live action. Henry was not touched on that touchdown run. They didn't get a hand on him. Will you take us through the run and the blocks by the front five at various levels that led to the game-winning score?
It's funny you asked me about that play because I thought, and we'll get to this in a sec. I thought that the kid at left guard, Aaron Brewer, played really, really well, but that's just an aside right now. It came out of 13 personnel, that 29-yard touchdown run, which means they had one back and three tight ends. Two of the tight ends were to the strong side of the formation, and that was Swaim and Smith. So that was the four-man surface side, as we call it. That was the strong side. So you had really good blocks by tight end Smith and Swaim, and really good blocks by Quisenberry, who obviously came in for Sambrello, and the left guard Brewer. So actually, Quisenberry kind of got off his guy a little bit, and I forget who that was exactly, but still that particular player was not in position to really touch Derrick Henry. And then Henry cut off that back to the inside and no one touched him, but it was a strong side run, four man surface, outside zone, which was pretty much their foundation throughout the entire game. And it was obviously unbelievable. Just a couple of points unrelated to that play is the way they just stay with Henry running the football, no matter what the game situation is, just really speaks to their commitment to running the football.
How was Quisenberry overall stepping in for Sambrello, and how different might it be? There's one thing when you step in kind of and the team hasn't been preparing for you, as opposed to if the Colts are expecting to see him now as a starter.
Is that probably going to be the case?
Yeah, Sambrello's out long-term probably for the season.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. I didn't know what the injury was. I hadn't seen anything about it. I thought Quisenberry did a nice job in this game. I mean, look, obviously he's been around and he's not been a starter, so you just don't know. But again, then you look at Aaron Brewer, the left guard, who's 6'1", 275, and you looked at him, he looked like a ninth grader, in between Ben Jones is not big, but I mean, just looked like a ninth grader out there because he's small. And I thought he acquitted himself extremely well, both as a run blocker and in pass protection. I thought he played with strength and leverage. I thought he competed and battled. That really stood out. When you play in the interior of the O-line, competing and battling becomes so important. It's not all about looking pretty inside like that, particularly against the Ravens defense. And I thought Quisenberry, and I don't know the number of snaps he played at left tackle. It couldn't have been more than 20 or so, I would imagine, give or take. But I thought he played reasonably well, given the situation. We'll see now when he, goes up against, has to play a complete game now.
You mentioned Aaron Brewer, Greg, and just let's dive in a bit more on him at guard, because he's the opposite of what Roger Saffold's known for, right?
Yeah.
When you think of the overall style, how much did it help Brewer that he was playing against the three-man front and not a four-man front, which he could potentially face this week in Indy if he's needed, if Saffold can't go?
Well, there were a lot of plays in which he was uncovered, and that certainly can help because he doesn't necessarily have someone right in his face. This week, he's going to get a three technique. He's going to get Buckner And that'll be a fascinating matchup if Saffold can't go. But, you know, the larger point, and it's funny you mentioned that, Jonathan, but the larger point here is the Titans, and they do this as a matter of course, they play out of base personnel. And this was the second week in a row that the Ravens played a team that played a ton out of base personnel. And I think the Ravens played out of base personnel on over 70% of their snaps. And by that, I mean they did not have three wide receivers on the field. So they had various permutations of base personnel. They just did not have three wide receivers on the field. And what that did for the second week in a row, it put the Ravens in their base defense. And I don't think they love to play in their base defense. I don't think that's something they'd ideally like to do. And I think that, you know, we saw that the Ravens ran, the Titans ran the ball pretty well. I mean, obviously when you play the Ravens and you run the ball a lot, you're going to have runs that are 1 yard, 2 yard. That happens in a run game. But as we know, the Titans stay with it. And Henry had a lot of 5 yard runs, 6 yard runs, 8 yard runs, and they just kept pounding away. But there were a lot of snaps in which Brewer did not have someone head up on him.
Greg Cosell with us, presented by Turner Security. The Titans offense had been stagnant for much of that game before the final four possessions. It was 21-10. And then they had two touchdown drives and two field goal drives. In total, 36 plays, 297 yards. Yeah. So what changed? So you mentioned the base defense that Baltimore was in, and they don't want to stay in that all the time. But
no.
What changed in the final four possessions for Tennessee to where they dictated what Baltimore was doing defensively? They could not do throughout the pace of that game.
Well, I think, number one, I think that's often the case with Henry. I think Henry often gets more yards as the game progresses. So that in and of itself is not abnormal. And just one other player I'd really like to mention who is totally unheralded because he's not a pass receiver, but I think Jeff Swaim has become a really important part of the Titans' base personnel run game with his ability to line up in multiple positions and be really effective as a blocker. We saw that on the Henry 24-yard run early in the fourth quarter. We saw that on the 11-yard run on the same possession where he had really good one-on-one blocks. So the yards start to pile up for Henry as the game progresses. I thought that Tannehill had some really good secondary read throws. The Davis 50-yarder was a secondary read throw because that was your classic – that was one of their staple plays where he drops back, bang, play action. He's looking for Brown. Brown was not there. And then he hits Davis, who was not the primary. And that became a 50-yarder because Marcus Peters, who's known to do this, his eyes were in the backfield, which they shouldn't have been. But Davis showed with his initial step or two that he was going to run block. So there was a big play there that produced a lot of yards. I think there was a 22-yarder later in the fourth quarter as well. Same situation. He was looking for Brown, and Davis ran an out route, and Tannehill did a great job. He moved his feet with his eyes and delivered the ball to Davis. So I thought Tannehill did a really nice job on those two plays of coming off the primary, which was that bang play action where they like to hit Brown. You know, we've seen that I don't know how many times the last 2 years. Actually, they did it on the first series against Indianapolis, 2 weeks ago. And he came off that and hit Davis so those two plays right there are 72 yards.
Dan Orlovsky went back over, I believe it was the final three possessions and listed every one. And everyone was every play, run or play action, except one.
Right.
Was a drop back pass. And he gave them, it was said, testament to knowing who you are and doing what you do.
Yeah. And look, I've talked about that, and I think it worked in this game. I still think you have to be careful. You know, I've talked about that with you guys before.
Yeah, independent.
And I think you do have to be careful about that. I know Dan is a big, big fan of Arthur Smith, and he's talked about it numerous times. And I'm not a fan of Arthur Smith. I just think you have to be careful. You know, Tannehill, because he did such a good job on those plays that I mentioned, it worked. But I think that if everything is a run or a play action pass, and that's the only way you can play, I think you're going to run into situations where that doesn't work.
Are there specific examples of getting Tannehill into a rhythm? Because
he was bad early.
Yeah, I mean, he did not look comfortable early in the game. The interception, he had Patrick Queen, I believe, bearing down on him.
Yeah, my sense was McNichols blew that protection.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know if they talked about that, but I think he blew that protection.
So after the interception, it just looked off. It wasn't as comfortable as what we saw, but he finishes the game completing 13 of his final 14 attempts.
Yep.
His final seven attempts were all completions. So can you give us examples of how Arthur Smith gets him into a rhythm? Are there ways to explain what you broke down against Baltimore in past weeks as well?
Well, I think they always, by the foundation of what they do offensively with the run game and the pass game working off of it, theoretically, that always gets him into a rhythm, theoretically, because play action, quick game play action, the reads are defined, the throws are defined. I mean, when he drops back and hits A.J. Brown on those inbreakers, they're just sort of five-step slants as opposed to three-step slants. Those are essentially one-read throws. Now, is there another option? Yes, we just talked about that when he hit Davis on the 50-yarder and the 22-yarder. But those balls are meant to be thrown when you design them to whoever the inbreaker is. It's usually A.J. Brown because he's so good run after catch. So theoretically, the whole premise of their pass game is supposed to get Tannehill in rhythm. This is not a straight drop back, deep drop pass game where he has to scan the field and make difficult throws at the intermediate and deeper levels. So, you know, there are times, look, defenses know this too, by the way. So there are times it doesn't work, and then you have to have something else to go to. And we've seen that at times that can cause problems.
On the other side, they did not do a good job 2 weeks ago against Nyheim Hines.
No.
Here comes Jack Doyle back into the picture, and out goes Jayon Brown, who's done for the season. They're hoping to get David Long off the COVID list, but he's not been the player he was last year. He's seemingly been in the doghouse. Will Compton finished this game, the Baltimore game, seemingly with success. The Ravens certainly didn't attack him. Does not bring the speed and athleticism of Jayon Brown or David Long. How do you see that formula working out here? I would think advantage Colts with Hines coming off the success and Doyle in the formula.
Yeah, that's a great point because Jayon Brown is a really good player and he's an athletic player. And, you know, Compton to me is a real solid pro, one of those guys you can always line up and he's not going to hurt you, but he certainly lacks the athleticism that you'd love to see at the position. You know, and Hines has become, and he was a major factor in that first game 2 weeks ago, where I think he had 12 rushes for 70. And we've seen them expand his role in the pass game where they detach him from the formation. He's usually to the boundary. He can be in the slot to the boundary or he can be split out wide to the boundary. And he's become a major factor. So the question is, how do you deal with that? They're not a big empty team, but they've been doing a little more of that because Hines has become a bigger factor. So PK, you're right. I mean, David Long is clearly more athletic than Compton, but he hasn't played. I guess he hasn't practiced either. So, and he's still a young player. So we'll see how they may end up going with Compton just because they know he'll be assignment sound.
There was a huge speed advantage for Indy's offense against this Titans defense this past Thursday night football game that we saw here. So, you know, we hope to see Adoree Jackson at some point. We haven't seen that yet, but it's not like you can just flip a switch and add speed defensively. So what adjustments would you like to see the Titans make against Indianapolis's defense? Phillip Rivers did whatever he wanted in that game.
Yeah, and there were a couple of busts, I thought. That's the thing. I mean, you know, and obviously you hope that that doesn't happen again. I thought the was it the 30-yarder? I thought that – not the 30-yarder. There was another long play that I thought was a bust in that game. But the 30-yarder, too, which came, I think, in the second quarter, that was an interesting play where I think the Titans got a little – tied up defensively as to what they were playing and how they wanted to play that particular route concept. But the 40-yarder, which was on the fourth quarter TD drive. That's the play I'm remembering. That was a bust because I thought the Titans were in cover one and Pittman ran a shallow cross and Butler passed him on to no one. Mm. So to me, that was a bust. So there were a number of longer plays in that game that I thought were problematic from a defensive assignment standpoint.
Harold Landry was used in an interesting way this past week against yes. Lamar Jackson. They were stacking him off the ball to yes. play the dive or the pitch. And with the option game, you need another player to overhang, another defender to overhang. And this was the game that I felt like was specific to Baltimore.
Yep.
But it worked well. So what are aspects of what Landry was doing? He played virtually every snap, I believe, Paul, but one or two.
98%.
Yeah, and the biggest play came on that sack in overtime right at the end of his day.
And he was in an overhang position on that play as well.
Okay. So they were deploying Landry in that way. Was there a rhyme or reason to how they were doing that specific to playing the Ravens that you see maybe week to week with teams defending Baltimore now?
Oh, for sure. You can go back the week before, and then Belichick did a specific thing. He played him outside in, Jackson, that is. He played out of dime. He played with two safeties, Adrian Phillips and Kyle Duggar, and they were essentially overhang players on each side, even a little wider than overhang players. And they counted on the Patriots, that is. They counted on their interior D linemen to win the battles inside against the Ravens interior O-lineman, which was a good move because the Ravens interior O-line is not very good. And in fact, they made a change this week going into the Titans game. So yes, Belichick played it a certain way specific to the Ravens. I think your point, Jonathan, is exactly right. I think one reason why Landry played so many snaps, it essentially became a 4-3 stack in some ways, is to get someone off the ball to react to that run game. There's no question about it. You can't react to that run game as an on the ball defender. It's too hard.
So what's the one thing you think the Titans can maybe most easily adjust to out of that last Colts game, or have to adjust to in order to survive, minus the obvious special teams gaffes?
Well, I think they've got to find a way to get pressure on Rivers. We know, look, Rivers was not under pressure in that game. We spoke about that week after the game. He was under no pressure whatsoever. And we know that that's not been a strength of the Titans this year, but they're going to have to find some way to get pressure on Phillip Rivers, because say what you want about Rivers, when he has time, he knows where to go with the football and he can make throws. The one thing that was interesting about the Colts game this week against the Packers is they started to get Jonathan Taylor back involved again. And he had 22 carries. I think he had 6 carries in a row to start the third quarter. So they obviously at halftime said, you know what, we're going to give the ball to Jonathan Taylor. And I think Taylor's a volume runner. And I think he struggled a bit. Really up to this week, where I thought he started to look more like the Jonathan Taylor of Wisconsin, more decisive, more aggressive as a runner. So we'll see if he becomes more of a factor this week. He was not a factor at all in the first matchup 2 weeks ago when Nyheim Hines played the large majority of snaps at the running back position.
Greg, Indy's defense last year was good, not great. Now they're the number one defense right now in the league, and they were a couple of weeks ago too. They've been steady. So is it as simple as they added DeForest Buckner and they're the number one defense, added with the talent they have around him? Or is there more to it than that?
Well, I think there's other players who've improved dramatically. I mean, Buckner's a great player. Grover Stewart's improved dramatically. He's a really good one technique next to Buckner. And he's an overlooked player because he's not a household name. I think the second year linebacker from Stanford, Bobby Okereke, is going to be a star. And I think he's moving in that direction. Last year, he was a rookie, just getting his feet wet, played more snaps as last season, his rookie season progressed. But now he's close to being a full-time player. He's really a good player. So they have, in today's NFL, and you guys are speaking about this with Jayon Brown now being out, they have, when they go to their nickel, now sometimes Anthony Walker plays in their first down nickel, but the majority of nickel is Leonard and Okereke, arguably two of the most athletic nickel linebackers in the NFL, and that's critical in today's NFL. I think they've got really, really good play from the safety position from two guys who not a lot of people know about, Willis, who's a second-year player from Michigan State, and Julian Blackman, who's a rookie from, I believe, Utah State, I forget. But they've gotten tremendous play from both those guys. So it's not just Buckner, Jonathan. They have young players who are getting better and rookies like Blackman who have really stepped in and done a good job.
Paul, Greg mentioned trying to find that pass rush against against Phillip Rivers. I wonder if we see more of Rashawn Evans. We've seen more of him in the pass rush recently and in recent weeks, but I wonder if we see more of a steady dose of that. Different defensive concept against Lamar Jackson, Greg, than what we would see against Indy. But I wonder if they can't use him more, or does the injury by Jayon Brown affect how they can now deploy Rashawn Evans at middle linebacker?
Well, that's going to be the interesting question. If they see Evans as, in a sense, replacing Brown, and we won't know the answer to that,
right,
obviously. But I remember Evans had a really good pass rush. It was in the high red zone. It was 3rd and 7 early in the second quarter, and he beat the left guard Bozeman, his former Alabama teammate. And he had a great pass rush, showed his speed, lateral quickness. So he can be, in my view, a really good pass rusher. The question is, how do they feel about Compton and how do they feel about David Long?
Yeah, it's hard to get him out to the edge, even when they're fully stocked inside. I think it's even harder to imagine them doing that now, minus Brown.
Greg, on the way out, I want to get a couple of quarterback assessments from you. PJ Walker in Carolina.
Yeah, I didn't get to see him yet because it's a short week for us, a shooting matchup earlier in the week. So I did not get to see him yet.
How about Taysom Hill in New Orleans?
I did watch Taysom Hill, though, because I knew that he'd be a guy, because they have the best record in the AFC. So I knew he's a guy that I'd be asked about. And I did watch him. And again, to me, that's a great example of understanding your quarterback and coaching, because Sean Payton's one of the best. So you saw a lot of play action boot, define the reads and throws, a lot of half field reads, which is the right thing to do. They did an excellent job with motion, which also impacted the defense and set up the route concept. So I thought they did, Sean Payton did a really good job with Taysom Hill, setting him up to be as effective as he could be. And we know he's got the running element to his game. They ran gap scheme runs a ton in that game with him.
You know, I asked you if there was a switch that was flipped for the Indy defense. Can you point to anything specifically with Gruden and Carr in Vegas as to why the production level and the play calling is so much more productive now, seemingly, than maybe at this time last year?
Well, I think it becomes a case too of familiarity in what Gruden wants to do, and that Carr is just much more comfortable with it. You know, to me, at his core, what Gruden wants to do is a little bit old school. What Gruden wants to do is play power football, line up, run the ball. He does that a lot with multiple tight ends. And then off of that, be able to drive the ball down the field. Now, obviously, you're not throwing it deep all the time, but to be able to create those explosive plays off the fact that you can play physical power football with your multiple tight ends. And the other part of that, which is critical, and I actually had this conversation with John Gruden years ago, he talked about the most important thing in his style of offense for the quarterback is completions. So he also wants short passes. He wants the quarterback to have a high completion percentage. He wants completions to be the number one element in the pass game.
Carr's looking really good right now.
Yep. Greg Cosell of NFL Films with us, presented each week by Turner Security. When you turn to Turner Security, you can leave your security issues at the door. TurnerSecurity.us is the website. Greg, happy Thanksgiving to you. Enjoy the football. Thankful that you join us each and every week here on The Zone.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a great holiday. Thanks so much.
He is Greg Cosell. Follow him on Twitter, at Greg Cosell. Stay tuned. More coming. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.